to the forest. Pravrajyate patyau. When her husband left home. Apachaviraha. By separation from her son. Atura. Very sorry. Yatatva. Knowing the truth. Api. Although. Abut. She became. Nashti vatse. When her calf is lost. Gao. A cow. Eva. Like. Vatsala. Affectionate. The translation. Devahuti's husband had already left home and accepted the renounced order of life, and then her only son, Kapila, left home. Although she knew all the truths of life and death, and although her heart was cleansed of all dirt, she was very aggrieved at the loss of her son, just as a cow is affected when her calf dies. So you can repeat, Devahuti's husband had already left home. And accepted the renounced order of life.
And accepted the renounced order of life.
And then her only son, Kapila.
And then her only son, Kapila.
Left home. Although she knew all the truths of life and death.
Although she knew all the truths of life and death.
And although her heart was cleansed.
And although her heart was cleansed.
Of all dirt.
Of all dirt.
She was very aggrieved.
She was very aggrieved.
At the loss of her son.
And the loss of her son.
Just as a cow is affected. When her calf dies. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. A woman whose husband is away from home or has taken the renounced order of life should not be very sorry because she still has the presence of her husband's representative, her son. It is said in the Vedic scriptures, Atmaiva Putra Jayate. The husband's body is represented by the son. Strictly speaking, a woman is never widowed if she has a grown-up son. Devahuti was not very much affected when Kapila Muni was there, but upon his departure, she was very afflicted. She grieved not because of her worldly relationship with Kardama Muni, but because of her sincere love for the personality of Godhead. The example given here is that Devahuti became just like a cow who has lost her calf. A cow bereft of her calf cries day and night. Similarly, Devahuti was aggrieved, and she always cried and requested her friends and relatives, please bring my son home so that I may live. Otherwise, I shall die. This intense affection for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although manifested as affection for one's son, is spiritually beneficial. Attachment for a material son obliges one to remain in material existence, but the same attachment, when transferred to the Supreme Lord, brings one elevation to the spiritual world in the association of the Lord. Every woman can qualify herself as much as Devahuti, and then can also have the Supreme Godhead as her son. Well, probably every woman can qualify herself. That's a tall order, but you can do it. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead can appear as the son of Devahuti, he can also appear as the son of any other woman, provided, here's the operative phrase, that woman is qualified. If one gets the Supreme Lord as a son, he can have the benefit of bringing up a nice son in this world and at the same time get promotion to the spiritual world to become the face-to-face associate of the Personality of Godhead. Vanam. Pravrajate patya vapatya virahatura gatta tatvapya bhunaste vatse goriva vatsala. So omagana timirandasha gananjana shilakaya chakshur and miritam yena tasmai shri gurave maha. So here the Supreme Personality of Godhead has acted extremely cruelly to leave his poor mother. You know, this is just like, huh? Doesn't God have any, you know, compassion? or mercy? What's wrong with him? You know, maybe he should go to one of these seminars, empathic communication or something. And actually we see, not only in this case, practically speaking to the details, well, we know the details of many of the incarnations of Godhead. They do this to their mother, to their father, to their girlfriend. Not they, but he does it to his mother, father, girlfriends, you know, practically a wife. You know, look at all these different incarnations. Wow, what kind of God are we worshiping? I mean, for example, you have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who at the ripe old age of 24, you know, left home. And, you know, his wife, I mean, they'd just recently gotten married. It was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's second wife, actually. There was Lakshmi Priya, and then after that, there was Vishnu Priya. And Lakshmi Priya had left her mortal frame. Of course, she's an incarnation of the goddess of fortune, etc. But she had left her mortal frame of feeling separation from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had gone to East Bengal to preach Krishna consciousness and to actually acquire some money. That's what the excuse he gave. So there was separation there. And then, what to speak of Vishnu Priya, who was completely despondent when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left in the middle of the night and, you know, crossed the Ganges and then took sannyas from Keshava Bharati, and she never saw him again. I mean, that's intense. You know, you're not talking about, you know, that's one thing, like when a lady is like 50, 60 years old, and, you know, sure, I've had enough of the guy, you know. You know, when are you going to take sannyas? You know, sometimes the ladies say that. And then they have older children and everything like that to take shelter of. You know, I remember we had one family here. The lady was so happy when the husband left home. And then you know, she's visiting her children and the grandchildren. You know, it's a nice life there, isn't it? So anyway, but Lord Chaitanya had left home when 24. There was no children, grandchildren, or anything. Just two ladies in the home. Sachi Devi and her. And similarly, you know, Krishna left Vrindavan at 16 years of age. I mean, some of the acharyas say different, but Prabhupada said 16. At 16 years of age, Lord Krishna left Vrindavan, and then the girlfriends, the gopis, they were just completely bereft, and they were feeling so intense separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then that in the Lalita Madhava, Srila Rupa Goswami actually writes about their intense separation, talking about how Radharani, this is a story illustrating the bhava, not necessarily historically accurate, but how he describes that Radharani jumped into the Jamuna and committed suicide, feeling the separation from Krishna. And many of the other gopis did it similarly. And then, of course, then he talks about how they manifested an expansion of themselves in Dwarka, getting married to Krishna. You know, Radharani was married to Krishna, Satyabhama, and Chandravali, that's Rukmini. And there's a whole story in the Lalita Madhava, which I'm not going to get into right now. But in any case, there was like this intense separation. I mean, they loved Krishna so much that those who remained in Vrindavan, such as Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, they actually like acted like crazy people. I mean, completely. I mean, if there was a psychiatrist present in those days, they would have just definitely medicated them, I mean, basically, because they were so, isn't it? I mean, just from the external viewpoint, it was like, huh? You know, these people are just talking to the wall, you know, seeing Krishna when he's not there, you know, looking at his footprints and fainting, not eating. You know, there's severe depression when someone's not eating. You know, someone can't eat. I've never had that problem. So most devotees don't have that problem. So you have that in Krishna's pastimes, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, and then here's Lord Kapila's pastimes, and even the gopis, they're accusing Krishna many times of being cruel. There's this Ramada Gita, the song of the bumblebee, where Radharani is an unreliable servant of an unreliable master, like that. And then they're accusing Krishna. Anyway, they're going over Krishna's pastimes, such as the Ramayana pastimes, where Lakshman cut off the nose and other parts of the body of the Surpanaka, and they're criticizing Krishna, and his incarnations. They're so cruel. This loving, adorable lady approached you, and you responded to her by cutting her ears and other part nose and other parts of the body. What kind of god are you, or what kind of lover are you? Anyway, and even when Krishna is present in Vrindavan, he just like trying to aggravate everybody anyway by making believe that he's interested in Chandravali, and Radharani's getting angry, and he likes to see Radharani angry. There's this place in Braj called Manasarovara where Radharani, there's a lake there where Radharani goes just to be angry at Krishna. So one may question, what is this god up to? Doing all these things, aggravating his devotees, leaving his mother. Lord Kapila didn't need to leave his mother. Well, actually, this is it. And of course, Lord Ramchandra's pastime. Another point is Lord Ramchandra sent his wife away. And of course, he was showing how a king should act. The king is actually so responsible for the citizens that he has to sacrifice his own family and his own happiness just for the happiness or the welfare of the citizens. Because we don't have modern day politicians, presidents who are ready to do that, isn't it? They're not actually exemplars. Even our present president, he's a nice person. But he's not that sort of person like Lord Ramchandra. This is not Ram Raj. Some of the devotees were actually thinking if Barack Obama's elected, it's going to be Ram Raj in the United States. I think they're really an illusion about that. Things may get a little better, but it's just like dry stool and wet stool in the material world. The point is Lord Rama sent his wife away. And that's so intense. Sita Devi, there was no fault in Sita Devi. And even when she came back, he wanted her to just like a test to her own chastity, There's that story in the Ramayana. She said, he wanted her to say, I have never been unchaste, never thought of any. Even though she passed so many tests, like flying over the Sagara, Shibi Sagara, when she was in the ashram of Valmiki Muni, still, it's just such intense, and she was just feeling so intense. Actually, it's interesting, I analyzed this whole story where she says, if I have never thought of anyone else but Lord Rama, let the earth open up and let me enter into the earth. And so some people explain that story as, it's very interesting, some people explain that story as that she was so upset with Lord Rama, she wanted to get away from the whole situation. She just was completely fried, insulted. Like sometimes if we're insulted, we say, let me get out of here. No one loves me. Get me the hell out of here. But actually, the reason she did that was out of service to Lord Ram, to prove her chastity, to help Lord Ram in his service as king. So I analyze this that she was so chaste that actually all of her activities and consciousness were dedicated to pleasing Lord Ram. And that even though she was insulted, and certainly that was an insult, practically speaking. I don't want to criticize Lord Ram, but it was an insult. Even if she was insulted, she still was thinking of pleasing Lord Ram, and that in order to serve Lord Ram, she had to prove her chastity beyond a shadow of a doubt to exalt Lord Ram. Anyway, so you find all these circumstances. So what's happening here in the relationship with Krishna and his devotees? And also, you also find the statement in the Bhagavatam, Yashaham Anagranami Horeshyeta Dharamshanai, if I especially favor someone, I take away everything. So what is up here? Why don't we just become Christians where it's considered that if you're spiritually advanced, you become wealthy, and you get all sorts of opulence and God loves you, put your hand in the hand of man across the water, all that other nice stuff. So why don't we actually, what are we doing in the Krishna consciousness movement? And then, you know, we're encouraged to become so austere, like the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they're exalted as the greatest devotees. And, you know, what sort of movement are we in? Or what sort of God are we worshiping, you know? I mean, at least we should worship Lord Shiva, where his devotees become opulent, you know. Lord Shiva's austere, you know, we should worship him, he's austere. And if you worship him, you become opulent. Wow, great God to worship. Anyway, so, of course, we should worship Lord Shiva as a devotee of Krishna. So the point is that Krishna exhibits these pastimes in which he puts his devotees into intense separation, as described in the Shikshashtaka, next to the last verse of the Shikshashtaka, Yugayitam Nimishena Chakshusha Parvishayitam Shunyayitam Jagat Sarvam Govinda Vidahename. So his devotees will become closer to him. This is called Vipralamba Seva. So he's actually, this is what, you know, like a bhava, an emotion, an intense emotion. And this intense emotion, although it appears to be misery from the external viewpoint, is actually the highest happiness, the ecstasy of a devotee. You know, I'm just missing Krishna so much. I want to see Krishna so much. And Prabhupada said we should cultivate and do devotional service in this mood. Of course, at least in this particular lifetime, it's not that Krishna came to us and then Krishna left us. Well, I haven't had that experience, you know, like, you know, Narada Muni, when he was in the forest, he was meditating, Krishna appeared to him once, and he said, Krishna said, only once in this lifetime shall I appear to you, you know, you have to wait a long time, you know. I haven't had that experience, you know, that I was meditating in the forest, and Krishna came and played his flute. Of course, at one time I was at Govardhan, and then I heard a flute playing, and I realized it was the PA system. You know, first I was thinking, wow, I made it in Krishna consciousness. You know, I heard the most beautiful flute, and I said, wow, Krishna, you know, somehow or other, you paid me back for all these years of austerity, you know. And then I realized, when I heard it was a real tinny sound, you know, where I stayed, Govardhan, there's a PA system, you know, they're playing the flute. And as soon as I heard some Bollywood ladies start singing, then I understood I wasn't in the spiritual world. So, but for most of us, it's not like that we, you know, we see Krishna. I mean, we see Krishna in the deities, but, and that is directly Krishna, Sakshat Brajendra Nandana. But we don't have that same experience that Narada Muni had, the same experience that Devahuti is having as being described here. So it's a little bit different. But still, we should cultivate the mood of separation. Why? Because once we were, Prabhupada said, we were originally Krishna conscious living entities. So there is that mood that we can cultivate in reality towards the Lord, because we are missing the Lord, who we have personally seen many, many eons ago, many, many lifetimes ago. So we cultivate that mood of attachment, that mood of Vipralamba Seva. Anyway, so this is one reason why the Lord left his mother like that. Now, another reason, there's many reasons, actually. Another reason why the Lord left his mother was to, you know, preach Krishna consciousness more widely as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That was another reason why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left his wife and family. And Krishna, of course, left his nice situation there in Vrindavan so he could carry out his Paritranaya, Sadhanam, Vinashaya, Jadushkutam stuff, which means annihilating the miscreants, you know, eliminating the world from its burden, which he promised Lord Brahma he would do when Lord Brahma and his associates went to the shore of the ocean of milk, isn't it? Anyway, so there's other reasons like that. And then another reason, especially with Lord Kapiladev, that's being described here, is to give an example of how one needs to extricate himself at a certain stage of life from... Let's say, rather than use a negative explanation, one needs to absorb himself fully in the Krishna conscious process of Shravanam and Kirtanam. Because that's actually what happens when you take sannyas, or when you leave home, is that you become absorbed in Shravanam and Kirtanam. There's not much other paraphernalia you can take with you. I mean, it's not like sannyas or vanaprastha are very, very similar. That when you're traveling like that, you can't you know, you can't, at least traditionally nowadays, of course, you can. You can take luggage, you know, I was in the airport. And we carry like 50-pound bags and check them in, you know. So what type of sannyasi are we? But anyway, but traditionally you would walk all over. Lord Chaitanya carried his kamandalu, you know, water pot and staff, and that was about it, and a servant to carry some other things. So you become free. The whole point is to become free to absorb in Shravanam Kirtanam, because these are the most important activities. Now, in the Vedic system, let's reflect on the Vedic system. In the household life, it's not that there was like so much like kama, like sense gratification. That's really not, because it was actually very, you know, it was Vedic in the sense that they followed these rules and regulations of samskaras and everything like that. So the main thing that really kept them from hearing and chanting, more than anything else, at least in the higher status of life, was the ritual, all the rituals they had to do. And actually, we analyzed the history of the Vedic development. We'll see that the sannyas, or the going to the forest, or the vanaprastha, was actually as a reaction. The large amount of people who did this was as a reaction to being, you know, basically to wanting to get away from all these rituals and just hear and chant about Krishna. And you see the development of the Vedic literatures are like that too. I mean, the original four Vedic literatures, the Vedas, you know, because if you talk to people about being Vedic, at least to scholars, you really have to describe what you mean by being Vedic, because we use this word Vedic to indicate so many things that has nothing to do with Vedic. They actually think you're referring to the four original Vedas. You know, the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, Tharva Veda. So we have to say that by Vedic, we mean these four Vedas, the Puranas, the Itihasas, the histories, the Upanishads, Aranyakas, they're called the Aranyakas. So that's what actually we mean. We have to define that when we're talking to scholars. Because if we say this is a Vedic movement, to them that would mean we're just engaging, what, sacrifices all the time. Because that's what the four original Vedas are. Four original Vedas, like the Sama Veda is a book of hymns to the demigods. Yajurveda is a book of like instruction manual and how to do your fire sacrifice. In other words, what type of spoon you use for, you know, like you see, devotees have become very sophisticated nowadays in ISKCON and these things. When we were young, we first joined the movement, we used any type of spoon, you know, like a teaspoon or, you remember that? Or anything. But nowadays they have a spoon that looks like a fingers. They have a spoon that looks like an alligator. I mean, there's so many different types of spoons like that. I mean, to me, it's just bewildering. I can't figure out what type of spoon is used for what, you know. You know, I'm a little challenged in that way. So they said they would have all these different types of spoons and all the, you know, it's sophisticated where you place this, to the east, to the west. You know, you have to put some banana leaves there. In this particular place, you have to say this mantra first, the Purnahoti. Anyway, so it's very complicated, believe me. Even the devotees in ISKCON who do it in a complicated fashion, they're not actually doing it up to the full level of the Yajurveda. So there's the Yajurveda, Samaveda, Atharvaveda, and then there's the instructions in the Vedas about how to, the melodies. To use, you know, you have to use certain melodies or rhythms. And so it gets really complicated. And so the point is that in the household life, the brahmanas, it was a real specialized activity. It's not that they could go to work during the day, you know, work at Circuit City during the day. Of course, Circuit City went bankrupt. But it's not that they could work at Walmart during the day and do that. You know, it was like a full time, they had to memorize, and there weren't books either at that time. You know, can you imagine, you know, no books, you had to memorize everything, 100%. No, what to speak of, no computers? I mean, that's misery. So, of course, they had good brains at that time. So they could remember all these things. But life was like that, like a Brahmin's life. They kept a fire going in their house all the time. I'm not talking to burn down the house, but they had to have, you know, there was a constant fire going in the house. There were fire sacrifices every day. And so by the time you get to talking about Krishna's pastimes, you're ready to go to sleep. Because there's so many, you know, in other words, it's not just comma. You know, generally we think, because in the West we think of household life as comma. You know, the entanglement of household life. But that was a small part of the Vedic household life. Like that, isn't it? You know, people think, you know, Brahmachari thinks of getting married, jaya, you know, now I can enjoy, tie the tin cans in the back of my rickshaw and ride off into the sunset. But actually, the main thing was dharma. And you know, there's art to economic development. So in the Vedic system, the dharma was very, very complex. And the Brahmin is also, another point is the Brahmin is actually, you know, they had a monopoly. And so what that meant is, you know, the Brahmin is, they had a monopoly and they all got nice donations for doing their little sacrifices and everything like that. And therefore, you know, to become a Brahmin was a difficult thing. It's not you just took the Bhakti Shastra exam or the Bhakti Vaibhava exam or the Bhakti Vedanta exam and studied for a few months. I mean, you had to just start from when you were 3 years old learning these mantras. And so, you know, they had a monopoly on life. And, you know, if you wanted to get bar mitzvah or anything, I know they didn't have bar mitzvah, but anything, you had to go to these brahmanas. And then, you know, and then there, it was just all these rituals and everything like that. And then there was no time to, you know, engage in so much Krishna katha. So the whole point, one of the main points of extricating yourself from that situation, and one of the main points Prabhupada actually wanted sannyas for, or retired life, anaprastha, Prabhupada said, you know, if one is retired, fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, even with one's wife, it's the same thing as sannyas. So was to just engage in Shravanam Kirtanam. And that's how our movement is expands. And that's how people become Krishna conscious. You know, we may do things, like as Prabhupada describes, translated Rupa Goswami's instructions, that a sannyasi should not be enthusiastic about, you know, constructing big temples, doing, you know, collecting a lot of money or anything like that. Because the main thing, the main concentration is Shravanam Kirtanam. And of course, with Shravanam Kirtanam comes Vishnu Smaranam. So that's actually the reason for this. So Lord Kapiladeva is showing this importance of just fully engaging in Shravanam and Kirtanam and not becoming entangled in the Vedic rituals. And he's very specific about this in his instructions too, about the process of devotional service. Lord Kapiladeva's instructions don't get too much into the Vedic rituals. I mean, there's some Sankhya philosophy there. Sankhya philosophy basically means the analysis of matter and spirit, coming to the conclusion that you're not the body, conclusion that you're, that's sambandha. That's Sankhya. You know, sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. Understanding your relationship. Abhideya means acting in terms of that relationship. Lord Kapila talks about sambandha and abhideya extensively like that. But he doesn't really get, Lord Kapiladeva doesn't really get into the rituals aspect of Vedic literature. I mean, I don't remember reading anywhere where Lord Kapiladeva advocates worshiping the demigods or anything like that, or getting into all these Vedic complicated sacrifices or anything like that. So I think in our Krishna consciousness movement too, of course, you know, we can do some opulent sacrifices and stuff like that for preaching Krishna consciousness. You know, I'm not criticizing those who get into all the different rituals, because in India, it can actually be a very nice preaching tool. You know, because if they see us doing all these, you know, chanting the Purusha Shukta and all these other things, then it's very attractive to people who are from the Brahminical culture. Very, very nice. But for ourselves, for advancing in Krishna consciousness, we don't need any of these things. Like Prabhupada said, the installation of Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan was done by Harinam, not by all the rituals that he hired the brahmanas for, but the reason he hired the brahmanas so the people would take it seriously. Similarly, when we had the Didi installation in Tirupati, they brought in so many of the brahmanas from Tirumala to help with the installation, and there were so many different things, you know, tying little kusha grass on your fingers like this. I don't know if anyone's ever seen one. This is the most complicated installation I've ever seen. And this was so that people would take it seriously. But the Prabhupada said there was the chanting of the holy names, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, that actually caused the deities, Krishna, to appear. in Krishna Balaram Mandir. So we don't want to forget that. We don't want to get too much into these other things. And as I said, that's one of the purposes originally of taking sannyas. And after the, just one other thing, after the four Vedic literature, we examine the development of the Vedas, historical development. Then there's the Aranyakas. Aranyakas means the literatures for the forest people, basically. Aranya means forest. You understand? Or woods, or, you know, national park or something like that. So those are the Upanishads. And the Upanishads actually deal with philosophical matters, which is really interesting. So you see in the development, there's the first, the rituals, and then the people want to get away from the rituals, and they go to the Upanishads. And then after the Upanishads, of course, then you have Vedanta Sutra. After the Vedanta Sutra, then you have specifically the, and the stories like the Mahabharata and the Itihasas, Mahabharata, Ramayana, and then after that, you have the Puranas. Specifically, we have our Bhagavad Purana, which is the Paramahansa Sanghita. So you see, there's actually a development, even an historical development, of the Vedic literatures in this way. Okay. So, any questions or comments? We have about 1 minute left. Some interesting information. Yeah.
If we have the historical development of the process of revealing knowledge, how does that speak for the persons who come before that time?
Well, they actually, it's an interesting question. They actually were so, the people who were actually absorbed in Krishna consciousness or actually wanted spiritual advancement could understand they were Paramahansas, or actually more advanced, not specifically all Paramahansas, Kshatriya Yuga they were. But so they can understand the essence of the Vedic literatures without being delineated, it being delineated so carefully. That's why in many of the Vedic literatures in the beginning, they were in sutras. Like the Vedanta Sutra is called Sutra. Sutra means a very short passage. The Vedanta Sutra says, for example, Atato Brahma Gyasa, some of the first verses. So now is the time for searching into the absolute truth. So they knew exactly what it meant. And also in the original Vedas, there are statements that all the demigods, they're ultimately looking at Vishnu. Om tad Vishnu paramam pada pashanti yat suryaha. There's that statement. Prabhupada quotes that statement. So they would know the purpose of it, but they would also know that most people are not ready for it. So they would be able to read the Vedic literatures and determine the essence. Whereas in Kali Yuga, you know, we'd just get bewildered by these things. That's one of the things Narada Muni criticized Srila Vyasadeva for, because he didn't directly point out the devotional service of the Lord in the Mahabharata. So anyway, so they were so intelligent. Those who were actually ready for self-realization, they could understand the short sutras or the short references in places like the Vedic literatures. It's interesting. I mean, a devotee should understand the whole historical development of the Vedic tradition. And we should understand what the word Vedic means, too. Even as far as